WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. UVA researchers launch a program to discourage the consumption of sugary drinks. A court orders registrars to accept student voter applications from JMU and other state campuses. And Governor Spanberger appoints dozens of new members to governing boards at Virginia's colleges and universities. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, June 10th. University of Virginia researchers are testing a new program to help rural families reduce their consumption of sugary drinks. UVA Health announced the digital effort on Tuesday, backed by a grant from the National Cancer Institute. The team has rolled out the We Sip Smarter program to 8 Head Start programs, which support children's development from birth through age 5 in Virginia, Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, and Ohio. The program will provide information and activities designed to motivate families who volunteer for the study to reduce their sugary drink consumption. Sugary drinks are the largest single source of added calories for Americans, and they are more popular among adults in rural areas than in urban areas. Full disclosure, UVA Health underwrites programming on WMRA. Virginia is making improvements to health outcomes for children, but a new report says the state needs to expand access to preschool and pre-K. Radio IQ's Michael Pope reports.
The Annie E. Casey Foundation's annual Kids Count report has some good news for Virginia, which is one of a handful of states to make the largest improvements in children's health outcomes. Valerie Slater is Chief Executive Officer for Voices for Virginia's Children.
One area where we fell behind was on access to childcare and early learning opportunities. That's something we at Voices have been sounding the alarm on for many years. And it's certainly something the General Assembly is aware of as well. Unfortunately, the issue just becomes more and more urgent as our affordability crisis deepens.
The report notes one area where Virginia could improve is access to preschool and pre-K. Delegate Irene Shin is a Democrat from Fairfax County who introduced an unsuccessful budget amendment that would have invested $500 million in making pre-K universal for all four-year-olds.
I thought the budget amendment was sort of a swing and a sledgehammer approach to trying to solve this, because we really just have to go and do it and like bite the bullet and like understand that the returns are going to be exponentially worthwhile our initial investments here.
Another suggestion in the report is raising reading proficiency for third graders. And the document points to Mississippi as a model that other states should emulate. I'm Michael Pope.
Virginia registrars are now required to accept voter registration applications submitted by college students, even if the forms are missing dormitory-specific details. The order resolves an October 2025 federal lawsuit alleging students were improperly denied registration because they left out room numbers or campus mailboxes. The campuses cited in the lawsuit include James Madison, Virginia Commonwealth, and George Mason universities. Governor Abigail Spanberger has appointed 32 new members to governing boards at Virginia's colleges and universities. The Virginia Mercury reports that last Friday, Spanberger announced 52 appointments, including 20 reappointments. The move furthers her efforts to remake university leadership amid concerns about the politicization of public college boards. The appointments come shortly after Spanberger removed John Rockovich from Virginia Tech's Board of Visitors for unspecified misconduct. The General Assembly must confirm all appointments. Virginia's term-limited governor is often responsible for bringing big projects to the Commonwealth, but those projects can take time. So who gets to claim credit when a project is announced and then completed? Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner has that story.
Governor Abigail Spanberger has been in office for 6 months, and her Secretary of Commerce, Carrie Chenery, gave this economic highlight at Tuesday's meeting of the Manufacturing Development Commission.
4,000 new jobs in the Spanberger administration, $8.5 billion in committed capital investment.
Massive deals take time, and completing them even longer. The $1 billion Lego facility in Chesterfield was announced in June 2022 under Glenn Youngkin, but only 6 months after he took office from Ralph Northam, and it isn't slated to open until 2027, with Spanberger likely cutting the ribbon. So which governor gets credit for an economic development project? Brett Vassy is president of the Virginia Manufacturers Association, and he's been on the Manufacturing Development Commission for over a decade and through several administrations.
The beauty of announcements is the governor gets to take credit on the very first day she walks in the door.
Delegate Roja Henson, the new chair of the commission, pointed to something he'd heard from former Governor Tim Kaine.
Each governor just takes credit, do the work, and then the next governor will take credit. So that's just how the cookie crumbles.
And here's how Republican former delegate Mike Watson, who was appointed to the commission by Youngkin, summed it up.
You know what? It really comes down. If you're saying this is my deal and I brought this in here, yeah, just say how you did it.
As for the future of economic development under Spanberger, Secretary Chenery promised news soon, perhaps even better news for Virginia's next governor. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Finally today, the Rappahannock Tribe's lawsuit over water will move forward. In Richmond County Circuit Court on Monday, the tribe's lawyers challenged a state permit that would allow Carolyn County to withdraw up to 9 million gallons of water a day from the Rappahannock River. They say that would significantly impact their cultural heritage and historic fishery and oystering grounds. Radio IQ's Pamela D'Angelo reports.
Outside a tiny courthouse in Warsaw, Virginia, just a few miles from Rappahannock ancestral lands, Chief Ann Richardson breathed a sigh of relief. Behind her, a team of attorneys, all volunteers, had just prevented her tribe's case against the state from being dismissed. Sam Alexander, a retired DOJ attorney, argued the tribe's case before Judge John S. Marsh. Part of that argument was based on the tribe's right to beneficial uses of the river under the 1677 Treaty of Middle Plantation with the British Crown.
And the state was arguing, because there is a connection to the treaty, that those are really breach of treaty claims, which an earlier Virginia Supreme Court case said could not be brought against the state. So we were arguing that that was not true.
That other case involved the Mattapani tribe preventing a reservoir project from flooding thousands of acres of land near their reservation. At one point, Judge Marsh said the state code requires DEQ to consider other agencies' studies. Here's John Brett Grosko with the Chesapeake Legal Alliance.
Part of our complaint was about the decision to return the river to the Mattapani River and not to the Rappahannock River, that was inadequately studied.
And while the day was a good one for the tribe, their chief is not letting her guard down.
I'm still concerned and always concerned until we get definitive decisions on them not being able to withdraw the 9 million gallons a day out of our river.
From Warsaw, I'm Pamela D'Angelo.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Wednesday.